This next session of Electionary at Lunch is devoted to a text coming to us from St. Matthew's Gospel, the 13th chapter. Chapter 13 of Matthew's Gospel is a chapter replete with the parables of Jesus. And the occasion of the offering of those parables is an important one for us to note. In chapter 13, matters have not exactly been going all that well with the ministry of Jesus. The opposition to Jesus' person and work, his words and his deeds, is a mounting phenomenon for the disciples to be observing and to be concerning themselves with. Things are not going as the disciples had expected or wanted. Matters are proving to be a surprise, a disappointment, a source of disillusionment even to the disciples. So in the face of this, Jesus, knowing that his disciples are concerning themselves greatly with the apparent lack of success of Jesus' public ministry, Jesus offers in chapter 13 a total of 7 parables. They are the parables of the sower, the weeds, the mustard seed, the leaven, the treasure in the field, the pearl, the precious pearl, the pearl of great price, and then finally, the last parable that Jesus offers in chapter 13 is the parable of the dragnet. All of these parables share in a fairly common design and purpose. Jesus' purpose in offering these first before the crowds in the company of the disciples. So the disciples are viewing the offering of these parables before the crowds. The first 4 of these are in fact offered before the crowds. The last 3 of these are offered privately by Jesus to the disciples alone. Attention is often paid to the division that exists then between the first 4 and the last 3. This is of some significance, but the disciples are present for all of these parables. The parables, it seems, are especially designed by Jesus for the comfort of his disciples, for their encouragement, to steady them in the midst of their present experience, in the context that they are experiencing right now and the uncertainty that they're experiencing right now. The sower, the weeds, mustard seed, leaven, treasure in the field, pearl, and dragnet parables are all designed to offer encouragement. The focus of our consideration for today will be the pericope selected for the Sunday coming now in about 10 days, which has to do with Jesus' effectively to do with the last 5 of the 7 parables of Jesus in chapter 13, 2 of them being offered first before the crowds, and then the last 3 being offered in private before the disciples. So what we're looking at this time are the parables of the mustard seed, the leaven, the treasure in the field, the pearl, and the dragnet. Jeffrey Gibbs' commentary on Matthew does a nice job of noticing that with these final 6 parables, starting with the parable of the weeds, the parables seem to be grouped into two groups of 3. 2 triads of parables then are offered by Jesus. Our consideration will have to do with then the final 2 of the first triad and the triad involving the disciples in private that completes the chapter. we begin then with verses 31 to 33 having to do with the mustard seed and the leaven. Verse 31 then. Another parable, alein parabolein, Jesus, laid before them paretheken autois. Paretheken is an aorist tense verb of paretitheme. Another parable, he laid before them autois, saying, legon. The participle legon is likely here just a participle of manner. The stereotypical speech, manner of introducing the parables, typical of Matthew. He laid before them another parable, saying, the kingdom of the heavens, he basileia ton uranon, is like homoia estin. Now, homoios here appears in the form of homoia, feminine singular and nominative, so that it would agree with the subject, he basileia. That form takes in its complement a dative, so what follows is accordingly in the dative. We're calling attention then to kako. The kingdom of the heavens is like kako, a seed. The form of kakos here is in the dative complementing homoia, a seed of a mustard plant, sinapeos, which, hun, which a certain person, anthropos, took labon and sowed esperen in his field, en to agro autu. Verse 32, which, ha, which is, on the one hand, what follows is a men de constructions, first men, then de. So the syntax here offers, you know, an observation on the one hand, and then following that, an observation on the other hand. So a seed of a mustard plant, which on the one hand, men, mekrutaron, is lesser, is smaller. You know, actually, the comparative here might be serving to express the superlative idea, and is often translated that way, which is on the one hand then the smallest mekrutaron of all the seeds, panton ton spermaton, but de, on the other hand, when hutan, it increases or grows to maturity, auxethe. This is a form of the verb auxano. Here it is aorist, subjunctive, and passive. Hutan takes the subjunctive. The form is intransitive and active in the passive. So it is characteristically translated. But on the one hand, when it has grown or has reached maturity, it is or becomes maidzon, larger than the genitive of comparison follows, ton lachanon. The form there of lachanon, a garden herb or a vegetable, appears in the form of a genitive of comparison. On the other hand, when it reaches maturity, it is greater than the herb plant or the vegetable plant and becomes kai genetai dendron, a tree. Jesus' parables characteristically involve both elements indicative of the everyday, the ordinary, the familiar, laced together with elements suggestive of an extraordinary experience or reality. Here's an extraordinary, the suggestion of an extraordinary thing. The smallest of seeds, the seed of a mustard plant being placed of all places in a field, that's perhaps peculiar enough already, but then what follows is even more extraordinary. Mustard seed plants don't typically grow to be all that impressive, all that large. In Jesus' parable, this singular mustard seed planted in the great expanse of a field actually grows to be much larger than one would ordinarily expect. It grows, in fact, to be the size of a dendron, a tree. With the result that, hosta plus the infinitive expresses result. So here, hosta is followed by the infinitive elthane, the aorist infinitive of erchemai, with the result that the birds of the sky, of the heaven, ta petena tu uranu, the birds of the heaven, of the sky, come, elthane, and dwell or settle, abide. Kataske nun is also an infinitive here, an infinitive of kataske nao. They dwell in that mustard seed plant's tree-like expanse. They dwell in entois cladois autu. They dwell in its branches. Thus far, the first parable, followed by a second parable. These parables, again, are being offered before the crowds, but they're significantly being offered for the benefit of his disciples. Verse 33, another parable he spoke to them, alein parabolein elalesen, of the verb laleo. He spoke to them autois. Again, he says, offers what he has suggested previously. The kingdom of the heavens is like hamoya esten he basileia ton uranon. What is it like? It's like leaven, zume, which a woman took, hain labusa. It's just, labusa is likely just a participle of coordinating circumstance. So a woman took it and hid it. Hain labusa, took anekrupsen and hid. Again, the combination of the seemingly ordinary together with the apparently extraordinary. Now, you don't usually hide leaven anywhere, but in this parable of Jesus, the woman takes and hides anekrupsen, the leaven, zume, in a measure of a fairly extraordinary measure of flour, in ace, flour, aleru. Well, actually, the object of the preposition here is sata. That's a Hebrew measure of a dry measure of a certain amount. The amount was apparently in Jesus' day a 13-liter strong dry measure of, you know, a certain material. In this case, the material is flour. Now, when you're preparing to bake, 13 liters dry measures, dry measure liters of flour is a little more than most would put together in order to bake. But this woman is not only putting together that much; she's putting together that much times three, sata tria. So three measures of this kind for a total of 39 liters. Jeff Gibbs' Matthew commentary translates the expression here: 4 gallons of wheat flour. So, you know, she took the leaven and hid it in a 4-gallon strong measure of wheat flour. She's preparing a lot of dough. At least one of the extraordinary features of the parable comes with the size of the measure of dough that's being prepared here. What's also seemingly extraordinary about Jesus' description of the woman and her activity comes with the suggestion that she's hiding anekrupsen, that leaven, in the dough. It stays there hidden until heos hu, until the dough itself, edzumothe halon, was all leavened throughout. So edzumothe is an aorist indicative passive form of zumao, to leaven, or to, in this case, the meaning is to leaven. Halon, the adjective, neuter singular and accusative, serves here as neuter singular accusative adjectives often do to express an adverbial idea. Until it was leavened halon throughout. So Jesus, parables thus far are very pithy, brief parables involving both ordinary and extraordinary features. What are we in a position to notice so far about Jesus' parables, and in what way do they explain or offer comfort to the disciples? Well, Jesus is apparently suggesting to his disciples that his ministry, though modest-looking externally and, in fact, seemingly unsuccessful thus far, like a mustard seed planted in a field, the smallest of seeds and not particularly impressive, not particularly something that you would expect to be leading to anything all that exceptional or particularly significant or important, is in fact a modest beginnings, actually going somewhere. Like the leaven hidden in the flour, not even visible, the things of the kingdom of God are just as hidden, just as elusive to our seeing and to our experiencing, to their experiencing. It may not look like much, suggests Jesus, but it's going somewhere. What Jesus is doing with his disciples is he's exhorting them to recognize that even these apparently modest beginnings, surprising, even disappointing beginnings, can nevertheless be going somewhere as long as things are in the hands of God. It's characteristic, suggests Jesus, for the things of God, for the things of the kingdom, to be hidden away in these experiences of theirs. He's encouraging them to hang with them, awaiting the time, the day, when the fruits will come, when the tree available to the birds of the air will come for them to nest in, when the yeast at a later time will leaven the greater whole, and the whole will be extraordinary, and the tree will be extraordinary, and the opportunity for great things to be happening will be extraordinary in a future which is yet to come. Interestingly, these are the two parables that conclude Jesus offering of parables before the crowds. The next two that he offers appear in verses 44 and following. Interestingly, this first triad of parables being offered before the crowds, and then a next triad of parables being offered before the disciples in private. They bear much in common, so much so that Jeffrey Gibbs in his Matthew commentary has suggested that the each triad is thoroughly related to the other triad, and the two groups of three are in fact chiastically arranged in the chapter here, so that the parable of the weeds has very much in common with the parable of the dragnet, the parable of the mustard seed, the smallest of the seeds, which actually proves to be a great thing over time, has much in common with the parable of the pearl, a small item, but an extraordinarily valuable item. The parable of the leaven hidden in the dough has much to do with the parable of the treasure in the field, which is also equally hidden, according to Jesus' parables. So these last three parables, treasure in the field, pearl, and dragnet, are what come next. What we should be noticing about them is that they have very much in common with the parables that have preceded. Some slight additional detail is given for the sake of additional associations, but throughout these, from beginning to end, we should note that Jesus is responding to the disciples' apparent consternation in the face of the lack of success of Jesus' ministry so far. And he's just encouraging them to remain steadfast, awaiting the day when the fuller greatness of Jesus will become all the more apparent. This continues to be the focus and the orientation of the parables. Verse 44, then. The first of a final triad of parables. The first two are pithy, like the last two that we've looked at. Then the final parable of the dragnet is a little more involved, much like the extensive detail of the parable of the weeds. Verse 44, the kingdom of the heavens, declares Jesus, hey basileia ton uranon, is like Hamoya Estin, same language again, is like a treasure, thesauro, which has been hidden. Again, the item in question exists in hiddenness. Kekrumeno is here a participle, perfect participle, passive, adjectival in function. So it too is like the form of thesaurus, masculine, singular, and dative, kekrumeno, which had been hidden in the field, ento agro, which hun, a certain person, anthropos, found, huron. The participle is a participle of coordinating circumstance. So we'll just translate these participles of coordinating circumstances if they were indicative verb forms joined together by means of a conjunction, chi, which a certain person found, but then again hid. Again, Jesus' parables are defined by both elements seemingly everyday and familiar, and elements strikingly extraordinary. Now, when you find something in a field that's hidden, one of your options would be to take it and run. But instead of doing that, the man here in Jesus' parable, akrupsen, hides it again. The form of crypto is in the aorist, so the relative clause ends with this suggestion, which a certain person found, and then he, akrupsen, hid, comma. And out of his joy, kai apotes charas otu, and from the joy of his, he departed, hepage. Now, the qualification is of some importance, especially with what follows. Apa tes charas autu. The person in question then does this joyfully. That may not seem particularly extraordinary, but let's keep reading and then come back to that. Joyfully he did what? Hepage, he departed. Kai pole, notice that all of these are historical presents, so they're kind of fronting tense forms, calling particular attention to the actions depicted here. Departed, hepage, and sold, pole, everything, panta, which he was having, hosa eche, and bought, kai agaradze, that field, ton agron ekenon. So instead of operating with the first option, take the money and run. The man hid the treasure back in the field, and in order to secure the treasure, departed joyfully, willingly, giving up everything else that he owned, everything else that he possessed. He sold it all away for the purpose of having but one thing, the treasure existing in the field. In order to secure that, he didn't just take that and walk off with that. He went to the trouble of selling off every other possession that he had in order to purchase the field, in order to have the treasure, the perceived treasure existing there in hiddenness in the field. Well, again, some of this may not seem entirely extraordinary, but let's keep going and then ask a few questions for the purpose of getting back to some of these observations. Verse 45, and actually we need to kind of not dwell too long on these last three parables. So let's read through those, the next two parables, and then come back to what seems to be the substance of Jesus' interest in lining these last three parables up the way that he offers them. Verse 45, again, offers Jesus, the kingdom of the heavens, he basileia ton uranon, is like homoia estin, a certain person, anthropo, again, the form of homoios takes the dative, so a dative follows, anthropon, masculine singular dative, a merchant, emporo, who sought, or who was seeking, zeitunte, adjectival use of the participle also in the dative, so that it agrees with anthropo and emporo, who was seeking kalus margaritas, fine pearls, and who found, another adjectival, use of a participle follows, or I'm sorry, perhaps not, reading on, and found one henna palutamon, a particularly fine, precious margaritane pearl, and departed up elthon pepraken, and sold everything, again, sold panta, everything which hosa he was having, ehen, and bought it, kai egorasen auton. Now, right, the participles are likely adjectival following upon the one that we saw in 46. Then comes an indicative verb form with pepraken. Pepraken is a perfect form, tense form of Peprasco. We didn't exactly translate it that way. Jeffrey Gibbs, in his Matthew commentary, again, makes the nice observation that there are no aorist tense forms of Peprasco for Matthew to be working with, so he has but the perfect to operate with here in the in past time. So with Gibbs, we'll offer that observation and translate simply in the past. That seems to be Matthew's intention here. So the certain person who was about the business of looking about for fine pearls was also one who found one particularly precious pearl and who departed up Elthon and sold then sold all things which he was having and bought the one fine pearl. Now, again, it may not seem that anything particularly extraordinary is going on here, but ask yourself the question, who in his right mind would sell everything that he owns? You know, we'll assume that the person is a person of some means. He wouldn't be looking for fine pearls if he wasn't a person of some means. He finds one pearl in particular that he particularly values or finds particularly valuable, and he sells everything. So when he's done with all of this, he's going to have nothing except for this one pearl. What right a person in his right mind in our everyday world would consider selling off all of his possessions, all of his savings, all of his considerable accumulated, you know, worth for the sake of owning one thing in this world, a precious pearl? I think the answer to that question is no one would do that. And yet Jesus' parable is meaning to suggest that one person in particular has done that, is doing that, will do that. A final parable. Again, palin, hamoia, estin, he basileia ton uranon. The kingdom of the heavens is like a dragnet, sagene, which was cast into the sea, blethese estin thalasson. And from all kinds gathered, kai ek pantos genus synagoguse. Synagoguse is another participle, adjectival, a form of synago. Here it's aorist. It's an aorist participle and active. Feminine singular and dative, so that it agrees with sagene, the noun for the dragnet. So the kingdom of heaven, of the heavens, is again like a dragnet cast into the sea, gathering from all sorts, all kinds. Notice that the noun for fish doesn't appear here. Ek pantos genos. A genos is a race, a kind, a species of a thing. So from all available categories, the net gathered, conspicuously perhaps, Jesus refrains from referring to all kinds of fish. Because with this last parable of the dragnet, with the suggestion that the disciples are and will be fishers of men in fellowship with Jesus, the gathering into the net will be a gathering of all kinds of people, not something else. So in very suggestive terms then, perhaps, the noun for fish is omitted and continues to be omitted. So, like a dragnet cast into the sea, it gathers from all kinds, verse 48, which, hain, when, hote, it was full, epleirothe, those who were drawing it to shore on a substantival participle, on a bebasantes, epi ton aigalon. And so first they draw to the shore the dragnet. Then they sit, kai kathisantes. So it's one adjectival participle after another again. Substantival participle after another here. When they did these things, synelexon, they sorted. Synelexon is of sylego, to collect or to gather, to sort. They gathered the good ones, ta kala, into a container, a vessel of some kind, an appropriate receptacle for them, shall we say, eis age of the verb, of the noun agos, but de tasapra, the worthless, the rotten ones, they cast outside, exo ebalon. Thus it will be, houtos estai entesen teleia, in the consummation to Ionos of the age, the angels will come, exelusantai hoi angeloi, and they will separate, kai aphoriusin tus ponerus, the evil ones, from the midst of the righteous ones, ek mesu ton dikaion. Jesus asks that, and there's one more verse. And they will throw them, cast them, kai balusin autus, into the fiery furnace, estain kamenon tu pyros. There will be eke estai, the weeping, ha klathmos, and the gnashing, kai ha brugmos, of the teeth, ton adonton. To conclude then, Jesus asks in verse 51, Senecate, have you understood all these things? Tauta panta. They said to him, somewhat unwittingly, I think, legusin auto. They said to him, yes, nai. Then he said to them, ha de apen autois, verse 52. Therefore, de atuta, every scribe who has become a disciple of the kingdom of the heavens, pas grammatus mathetuthes te basileia ton uranon, is like homoios estin, a man, a certain person, anthropo, a homeowner, the master of a house, oika despote, who, hostis, casts from his treasure, or brings out, pulls out from his treasure, ekbale ektu thesauru autu, good ones, or I'm sorry, new ones, kaina, and old ones, kai palaya. Quickly summarizing, from the mustard seed to the leaven to the treasure in the field to the pearl, Jesus moves from the seemingly inconspicuous or seemingly insignificant to the suggestion that significant things will indeed come out of insignificant things. Why? Because there's a man in this world who, in response to a perceived treasure existing in the world, and because he's found a pearl precious to him beyond comparison, is prepared to sell all things to sacrifice everything for the sake of the perceived treasure, with those next two parables, then, the treasure in the field and the pearl of great price, Jesus is speaking of a man. Jesus is speaking of himself, and the extent to which he's willing to go in this world to secure that which he perceives to be or knows is his greatest treasure, that pearl of incomparable worth. Jesus is describing how it will be that the seemingly insignificant will in the end be all important. It will be this way. It will be so because the Christ has come, willing to lay aside all things, to sacrifice all for the sake of the treasure that he has come to secure for himself. That treasure is the mystery of the kingdom hidden in this world. That treasure is a select people of God that he means to secure to himself. That treasure then is the very disciples that he's addressing with his parables. The 12, the first suggestion of a new Israel, a new select people of God, to be secured by Jesus and the offering of himself and the sacrifice of himself that's coming soon. Because this particular select man, select Messiah, is prepared to give, to sacrifice all things for the sake of the treasure that he has come to secure for himself, because it's that kind of a work that Jesus is doing, they have every reason to abide with this Messiah even in the midst of the troubling circumstance of his present apparent lack of success. Why? Because the day will come when that select treasure will be secured. The day will come when the dragnet will bring in persons of all kinds, and the ultimate purpose of the Christ will become evident as the good are separated from the bad, as the good are kept and the bad are cast out. It may not seem now that it's all going this direction, but Jesus assures them that it is, in fact. The comfort that he offers his own is a comfort that is just as timely now as it was then. No less disconcerting, I would suggest, even in our own day, how hidden the things of God continue to be, and yet God is faithful. God is in fact about the business of doing his work to secure that which is his treasure, so that ours would be a blessed future in fellowship with him, gathered unto him, kept as his select treasure, preserved in a condition and a fellowship and a future that is all important and is as much everything to us as it is everything to him. This is our hope. This is our conviction. This is our assurance. With this, Jesus steadies his disciples with this, with these same parables. We are strong even now to offer steady assurance to the people of God. So I wish you well in your service wherever you happen to be, about the business of doing his work as you seek in our day, in our time, in our service, in our opportunity to offer the same comfort to the same people of God, as we all await that day when Jesus will be with us again for the purpose of making all things manifest, these very things, the substance, the content, the hope of Jesus' parables, which has become our hope. The Lord be with you.